Hey everybody, it's Patricia Corey. I am back. That was the shortest hiatus in the history of radio. And it's because of all of you and your pleas for me to stay on and keep bringing you the voice of rebellion, alternatives, love for this planet, et cetera, et cetera. And here I am on Beyond the Matrix, the radio show that dares you to think outside the box of convention. And how excited am I? Now, you all know, of course, that I am a devoted supporter, lover, animal protectionist, especially for the whales and dolphins. And you also all know how often I refer you to the Sea Shepherd, which I truly believe is the ultimate expression of what humankind can be with the question of love for the animal kingdom. And surely the person I have on today is going to blow your mind. And I am not going to spend too much time giving you his bio because you all know who Captain Paul Watson is. And I know that you're going to be as thrilled as I am that I've managed to get an interview with him. It's rare. He's on his way to Antarctica, but he has granted me this time. Hi, Captain Paul.
Oh, hi. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on. I know you're a busy man. I know you're headed out to Antarctica, so I will roll right into this and tell you how much I am just devoted to you and the work you're doing. And one of the reasons why I wanted you on is because I'm always calling for people to support you, and today starts a whole new campaign where I'm going to do everything I can to keep people tuned in to what you need to get from us. I mean, we love you. You're our hero. It's not good enough. You need help. So we'll be talking about that as we roll into the show. But I'd like to just start by asking you. I know that you've been in Talgi trying to save the dolphins from the slaughter. And if you could just give us an idea of what has happened and what you've been able to accomplish down there.
Well, I haven't been there myself, but I've had a crew in Taiji, Japan, since September 1st called the Cove Guardians. And our idea is that we'll have somebody on the ground there through the entire season. That's from September 1st into March. And Scott West has been leading that, he and his daughter, Laura. And volunteers come from around the world. They're in and out and everything. So we've had, dozens and dozens of people come through. And so no dolphin is going to be killed in Taiji that we're not aware of. And this has been putting incredible pressure on the Japanese. They've got police and Coast Guard on guard, which is costing them a lot. There's really what it gets down to is this 39 fishermen who brought all this shame onto Japan. And that was all documented in the movie The Cove. And
yes.
They insist on killing dolphins, and they kill about 2,000 or 2,500 every year. And what they do is they drive the dolphins into the cove, and they select the best specimens, as they put it, and sell them to aquariums, and then the rest are just simply slaughtered, and the meat is distributed. And that's a scandal in itself because a lot of it goes into school lunch programs, and it's heavily tainted with mercury. And so not only are they killing the dolphins, but they're poisoning their own children.
Yes, I've had Hardy Jones of Blue Voice on my show before, and I know that you know him. And he has, of course, talked about the campaign to educate the Japanese with regard to the poison in the dolphin meat, but they keep eating it. What do you foresee here? Are we ever going to get rid of the slaughter at Talgi?
They're under terrific pressure, and one of the things that anybody can do is just simply call the Japanese consulates or embassies near them and just complain, because in Japan, every telephone call to an embassy or consulate has to be logged and reported, and this is putting a lot of pressure on the foreign ministry. In fact, the outgoing former Japanese foreign minister said the biggest headache that he had as foreign minister was the killing of whales and dolphins and the people around the world who are opposed to it. So they certainly are feeling that. This is one case where actually calling a consulate or an embassy really has an impact because of their rule that they have to report it and have to log it, and they're not too happy about it. So they've been getting literally hundreds of thousands of calls from all over the world.
Yes, in fact, I started a campaign for that earlier on in the season, and a lot of my followers were calling in. We listed all of the embassy phone numbers. I personally had the funniest conversation with the embassy guy in Rome because we had an Italian who was supportive of my position trying to quietly tell me who the right person was to talk to. And he was working for the embassy. So, of course, so many people are sympathetic with the situation. And we just have to, it's so important that people understand that this is not a one-time activity. The pressure has to be nonstop.
Yeah, that's true. And if we keep the pressure on, I think that that's the secret to all of these things. For instance, on the whaling issue, I think Japan's close to throwing in the towel on this because for this year, the fleet hasn't left. They're still in Japan. They should have left by November 19th. But the Japanese whaling fleet is still in Japan. And we're hoping that, you know, they stay in Japan. But our objective with the whalers has been an economic one, to sink them economically. And for the last 5 years, we've made sure they haven't made a profit. We've cut their kill quotas. Last year, we took over 50% of their kill quota away from them, saving thousands of whales over the last few years. And they're hurting. They're $200 million in debt and subsidy loans to their government. Their vessels are in a very sad state of repair. And every year we go down stronger, every year they go down weaker. So we're actually winning this war.
Oh, God, Captain Paul. You know, it brings tears to my eyes to think about some of the scenes from whale wars, like the one of them where you've got the great blue whale coming up full of blood. And I just can't tell you how grateful I am to you. That, I mean, there are people that are talking to talk. But you are really, really walking your talk. And I would like to remind people who are listening that here is a man and his team and those teams all over the world who are risking not only their careers, their reputations, they're risking their lives out there. And we need to do more to support them. So I'm going to be calling. Hopefully I'm going to have Captain Paul on the whole hour. But if he leaves us because he's going to get off early, I will be talking to you later about what we can do to support them to send. Well, I saw an appeal on your site for sending food to the ships. Has that been handled?
What's that? Sorry.
On your site, you were calling for food supplies for the ships. I'd like to know what you need. Obviously you need money, and we're going to see what we can do to get that happening. But you also need food supplies. Is that right? What do you need?
Yeah, but the food supplies, that's really a message sent out to the people in Australia. It's not practical from anywhere else. And the people in Australia have been remarkably supportive. So that's not a concern. We need donations because our biggest expenses are the upkeep of these ships, which are pretty expensive. We have three ships this year, the Steve Irwin, the Bob Barker, and our new fast interceptor vessel, which is called Gojira or Godzilla.
Well, I'm going to do all I can. You've got a devoted supporter on your hands here, and I will never stop rallying people to start sending in funds. And I mean, guys, you know, it's Christmas time. So here's the scenario. You've got your little fluffy bunnies and your warm cuddlies and the fire's crackling and everybody's opening their toys. Can you imagine a little whale, a little dolphin in a corner that are saying, please help us? And can you get yourselves to contribute even a small amount? I know that it's a tough time for a lot of people, but surely a few cappuccinos less and some cash over to Captain Paul and his team so that they can finance their, 6 months in the Antarctic now, Captain?
We'll be 3 months in the Antarctic.
3 months. And where do you go from there?
Other projects that we're doing around the world is we've had 10 years we've been in the Galapagos Islands working in partnership with the Galapagos Park Rangers to stop poaching, and that's been an ongoing and very effective campaign. This last summer we were in the Mediterranean protecting bluefin tuna. We went into found poaching operations off of Libya, cut the nets and released the bluefin tuna, and we'll be back again next summer on that. And we're in the Faroe Islands trying to stop the pilot whale hunt up there, where they drive thousands of pilot whales onto the shore and just butcher them. And that's not even done for commercial reasons. That's just done for sport, because it's a tradition. It's something like the bulldog.
Yeah,
that just kill whales.
Yeah, many of those pictures have circulated, and I've been screaming about that too. And we've got a lot of people writing to the Danish embassy, and the Danish embassy keeps saying, it's not our job, man. It's like they're independent, and you're talking to the wrong people. But I really believe that keeping pressure on the Danish embassy is a good thing. Am I on track?
Well, the Faroes is a protectorate of Denmark, and Denmark sends over their warships to defend this hunt, so Denmark is very much responsible. The killing of the pilot whales is a violation of the Berne Convention of the European Union, and the Faroes argues that they're not part of the European Union, although Denmark is. But the Faroese receive the benefit of the EU. Every Faroese citizen gets 3,000 euros a month in subsidies from the European Union. So if they're going to receive the benefits, then they should abide by the regulations.
Did I hear that right? 3,000 euros a month to every citizen?
Yes. The Faroes has one of the highest standard of living in the world. So, you know, the killing of the whales has got nothing to do with their livelihood or anything. It's they don't sell the whale meat. In fact, most of the bodies are dumped at sea. This last summer, we actually found the graveyard, really, and went underwater. It was an incredibly gross sight, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dead pilot whales that are sunken at the bottom of the bay here. And our divers actually had to swim through and record that. We actually brought one baby pilot whale. The body of one baby pilot whale out of the Faroes, brought it all the way to Paris and put it on the steps of the Danish embassy in Paris to, you know, to illustrate our point.
I have to be vulgar for a minute, Captain Paul, and say you have seriously got balls. I just love the way you work. I just can't stand it. How amazing. All right, so we've got all these testosterone studs slaughtering these beings just for the kill, just for the thrill of it. And the Danish embassy washes their hands, and the Faroe people, islands people, are still getting stroked to the tune of 3,000 a month each people. Are you hearing that? I have a constant visitor on one of my sites who is a Danish citizen, and she gets quite upset when I scream about Denmark. So I hope you're listening to this. I'm not going to name you, but I hope you're hearing what Captain Paul is saying and understand that the buck stops with Denmark. So please.
It doesn't. It's worse than the Faroe Islands, because in the Faroe Islands, these are 39 fishermen who are killing the dolphins. In Denmark, everybody gets involved, and they get drunk, and even children are involved. So we've actually documented children poking on the eyes of pilot whales, or, you know, cutting open the bellies of the whales. And that, we actually have a footage of a kid cutting open the bellies of one of the whales and pulling a fetus out. And this is the kind of stuff that they seem to be quite proud of.
I know I'm just going to be throwing you out a rhetorical question here, but how is it possible that there is so much violence in the human soul? I don't get it. When are we going to get better, Captain Paul?
I don't know. Humans have an infinite capacity to justify cruelty. That's what I've discovered over the years.
Oh, my God. It is just too shocking that a child would find delight in that kind of bloody violence. Man, oh man, is that bad karma. Let me ask you a question. You know, on your show, I have to tell you, there are a couple of times I've had to turn it off because I cry a lot and I feel all this suffering and pain. And any animal protectionist goes through that, and then we get back on the bandwagon. You were talking on the show about these beams that the Japanese ships had, this equipment that they had to zap your boats. And I heard rumors that you've got a new piece of equipment to counteract that. Can you elaborate on that?
They have these things called the long-range acoustical devices, which are sound weapons, and they send a very high-frequency sound waves. They're very extremely irritating now.
Hi, Captain.
Oh, hi. Yeah, we're in Australia, so sometimes it gets disconnected.
Okay, glad to have you back on. So we'll just say, pick up from where we were, he'll splice it. And you were talking about the extremely low-frequency beams that were coming out of these ships, the Japanese ships.
Yeah, they're very irritating. But, you know, we're operating at a disadvantage because we're trying to save whales without hurting anybody, and they're trying to kill us. And you know, the media perception is that anything we do is eco-terrorism, but anything they do is defending their so-called livelihood, even though what they're doing is illegal.
And so what kind of new equipment have you got to help protect you from this beam?
Well, we've actually got somebody gave us one of our own long-range acoustical devices. So we have that, and when they turn theirs on, we turn ours on. We also, you know, irritate them with these laser beams, which won't hurt them, but certainly, you know, if they're trying to kill a whale, we can, you know, flash these, and it certainly disorients them, prevents them from doing that.
And can you speak to the situation with the? I know that you're probably uncomfortable getting political here, but the Navy and their sonar testing in the oceans and what this is doing to the whales and dolphins.
The U.S. Navy's low-frequency sonar devices have killed hundreds of dolphins and whales. And what it is that this is some sort of a defense system to protect the United States from submarines. And last I heard, Al-Qaeda didn't have any submarines. But, you know, they get these things into motion, and they just keep, you know, experimenting with them, even when they don't have any use. And every time they turn these things on, whales die. What it does is it literally ruptures the eardrums of whales and dolphins and causes mass strandings. For a long time, the U.S. Navy wouldn't allow anybody to examine any of these whales that were killed off the U.S. And then finally, some whales were killed in the Canary Islands, and the Spanish government allowed autopsies, and that's where they discovered that the eardrums had been burst. But the National Resource Defense Council has been taking the U.S. Navy to court for years on this, and it's been back and forth and back and forth. I think it was George Bush who said, yeah, well, they're killing whales, but, you know, it's in the interest of national security, which I thought, was this what the world has come to, that to defend the United States, we have to kill whales in the interest of national security?
Well, everything is in the interest of national security now. I mean, pretty soon we won't even be able to eat food anymore. We'll be living in Soylent Green if the national security people are have their say about it. I don't know, boy.
Yeah, I know. They even got this thing called the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act now, that if you cost any company more than $10,000 in profit losses, you can be convicted of terrorism.
Oh, that's a new one. I haven't heard that. How's that going to affect you?
Well, we don't operate mainly in the, you know, in U.S. areas. But what it could mean is, say, for instance, if you boycotted tuna fish, you could be actually a terrorist just for boycotting tuna fish.
Oh, God. But, I mean, it's not limited to the United States anymore because, of course, we realize that that's kind of like the theater, but it's extending around the globe.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's, you know, where it starts in the U.S. and, of course, other kind of like other countries and that. I think it was just this yesterday, WikiLeaks leader, is who's an Australian, was being told that he could have his Australian passport denied just because he's been, you know, leaking documents.
I heard he was going to be considered for 56 years in jail.
Yeah, it's all sorts of, I mean, they're just really going after him. You know, I mean, the biggest crime is really letting the public know what's going on. You know, my God, that you can't do that.
Yeah, I tell you. But you're doing it, and you're doing it with great aplomb and vigor. And we sit and watch you and all of your team, and I'm in amazement of what you do. Here's a question I almost forgot. So I was talking to one of your representatives, and she said that you do too. I was saying, if I had the guts, I would be on board. And she said, sign up. Are you still taking sign-ups for volunteers to come on the ships?
Yeah, all of our crew are volunteers from all over the world. Right now on this campaign, we have 90 volunteers from 19 different countries that are participating. And every year, about a half of them are new volunteers. And we've had about 4,500 volunteers over the years. And because I feel that this is, you know, the best way to proceed. I mean, I couldn't pay professionals to do what these volunteers do with the kind of passion that they bring to the table. I know when people watch Whale Wars, people criticize us. They say, well, you know, your people aren't experienced. You know, they're not professional. And I said, I don't want professionals. I want people with passion, and you can't buy it. In fact, Ernest Shackleton, when he went to Antarctica in 1914, was criticized by the public and the media because his crew weren't professionals. And he said the same thing. He said, I need men that are going to get me to the pole. I don't need professionals. They're just going to be a problem. And he was right. So the interesting thing, too, is that my crew of non-professional, inexperienced people, we've never had anybody injured. We've never injured anybody. We've never had any onboard fires. We've never gone aground. We've had no oil spills. But the so-called professionals on the Japanese whaling fleet have had three fatalities, dozens of injuries, two catastrophic fires, and an oil spill.
Well, I saw one episode of Whale Wars when it looked like you were going to lose them. That was when you couldn't get the Zodiac in the water right, and man, it was looking scary. And I have to say that, you know, your people are really dedicated spirit warriors.
Yeah, I have to point out that Zodiac incident, which they use over and over again, was in a training exercise. It wasn't during actual campaign, but it was so dramatic that they kept using it over and over.
It was very dramatic, especially knowing how freezing ice that water was. Woohoo! Man, oh man.
Oh yeah, but you know, every year I give a certificate to any of my crew who jump in the water with just their bathing suit. It's called the Swim with the Penguins, and I think we give about 17 last year, you know. They're in and out pretty fast, but, you know, it's an interesting experience. The water is below freezing, but you know, you can do it.
Well, I've been out on the eastern coast of Canada, out trying to get near the whales, and they told me that 1 minute in the water and you're in hypothermia. So, you know, whoa.
No, that's not actually true, really. You know, as long as you're in and out, you're fine. In fact, I've spent in Eastern Canada in the ice. I spent 15 minutes in the water, and yeah, I got, you know, sick on it, but it didn't kill me.
I know, but you're Captain Paul Watson. I mean, that's another whole picture. Let me ask you this, Captain Paul: what is the perspective for this new year? Where are you focusing most of your energy, and what do you foresee as far as progress for the whales and dolphins?
In January, February, and March, we will be in the Antarctica. I'll have a crew also at the same time in Taiji, Japan, until March. After that, we'll have, we'll be operating in the Mediterranean to protect the bluefin tuna and in the North Sea to protect the pilot whales. We're also trying to stop the killing of the Cape fur seals in Namibia and southern Africa. So those are our main projects over the next year. We're also very active in Brazil and opposing the illegal fishing there.
When will you be in the Mediterranean?
We're there in June every year, and our patrols there are looking for bluefin tuna poachers.
Just June, because I'm about ready to volunteer.
Yeah, that's in June. In July, we move up. In July, we move up to the Faroe Islands in the North Sea.
Is that when the attack happens?
Yeah. Well, that's when the Faroe Islands campaign will be happening. Yes.
What can we do to help you on that?
I don't think the phone calls really help too much there, but you know, just supporting Sea Shepherd and getting this up there. And our plan for the Faroe Islands is to actually drop hundreds of these small acoustical devices into the water to create a wall of sound. Nothing like the Navy stuff, but just enough sound. They're like orca sounds, really. That will prevent the whales from moving close to the shores where they can be rounded up and killed.
You were using that technique in Talgi as well, weren't you?
No, we haven't used it there. It's a different situation. It's a little difficult to try that there. But in the Faroes, we experimented with it this last summer and looked and found that it worked. But in Taiji, you can't even get in the water. The security there is so tight, you can't approach the nets or the cove or anything. It's costing them a fortune to have dozens of policemen there on site all the time, and the Coast Guard's there in the harbor all the time. But the security there is just super tight.
But we did have slaughter in Talgi this summer, no?
Yes, but we were able to dissuade, or actually cut down on the numbers. But mainly what we were doing this summer was to experiment with these acoustical devices. And now that we found that they work, they're only about 50 euros to put together, so we're making hundreds of them to get them into place.
And one more question. I know that you're about to sail away onto your next campaign. What about Greenland? What about the whaling commission's decisions to let them whale? Is there any hope that can be reversed?
This year, the United States and New Zealand actually led an effort to compromise with the Japanese. And that's why we're calling our campaign now Operation No Compromise. It was very embarrassing for both the United States and New Zealand because their approach to compromising was voted down by the European nations and the Latin American bloc. And we were actually quite shocked because every U.S. administration since Ronald Reagan has stood up for the whales. And this is the first administration that actually betrayed the whales. And after all the promises made by the president, we were quite surprised about that.
Yes, I was quite more than surprised about that too. The green president, I think he called himself. All right.
Yes,
well,
it's been quite a disappointment when it's come to these things, unfortunately. But you know, I've learned over the years to not trust any of the politicians. In Australia, the late minister of the environment, former minister of the environment, was Peter Garrett, who was lead singer of Midnight Oil. He was a very outspoken environmentalist until he became minister of the environment. He turned out to be the worst environment minister the country's ever had.
Well, you know, they've got their agendas, don't you?
Yeah, and it certainly isn't the environment. The minister, the agendas of the ministries of the environment certainly isn't the environment.
And one more question I've got that is kind of like you're not allowed to speak about it, so you're the only man I know that will speak about it, and that is the Gulf of Mexico. You showed us some pretty scary images of what you saw when you flew over. What's the situation there now?
Yeah,
can you talk?
Our team flew over despite the rules, and you know, we've had a crew there ever since May in the Gulf of Mexico, and we're really limited to what we can do because U.S. Regulations prohibit you from even rescuing a sea turtle. It's actually a fine if you try to rescue a turtle or clean off a bird that's covered in oil. Basically, the United States government turned everything over to BP, who is the cause of the problem, and they're setting the policy. And for instance, all the funds that we spent on the campaign in the Gulf, we can't recover because BP said that they would compensate us for us, but only if we agreed to sign a document saying that we will never criticize BP, and we're not going to do that. So, but a lot of people are doing it, and that's how they're keeping everything quiet, you know.
What does this mean for the Gulf Stream and the spreading of all this toxic debris into the Atlantic Ocean?
I think it's a major disaster. The bluefin tuna, for instance, spawns in the Gulf, and a lot of them die this year. We don't know what the impact of that's going to be on the species. But you don't pour that kind of that amount of oil into an ecosystem and not expect there to be consequences. And they're spending more effort trying to cover it up than anything else. And in fact, what they've done is they ruptured the floor down there. It's constant. The oil's not stopped flowing. It might have stopped from the pipeline, but it's coming through fissures in the bottom. And, you know, this unrestricted drilling everywhere in the world is going to have more and more disasters. Now they're going to do the same thing in the Arctic now that it's becoming ice-free. They're looking at the possibility of going in there and drilling everywhere they can.
And you'll still be there fighting for the whales and the dolphins, won't you, Captain?
Well, as best we can. But, you know, we don't live in a democracy in the United States anymore. I call it an oiliocratic oligarchy, government of the oil companies, for the oil companies, by the oil companies.
That's right. Well, the whole planet seems to be by and for the oil companies now.
Well, they're very, very, very powerful corporations, and what they want, they usually get.
Well, wouldn't it be great if they could just use up all the oil and get over it already?
Well, that's what I sometimes say. Sometimes the solution to all this is everybody should buy a Hummer and get rid of the stuff. Seriously though, the problem is it's the finite resources and it's just being wasted without any thought to what the consequences of the future are going to be. Once the world runs out of oil, then populations are going to crash and civilization is going to come tumbling down because this entire civilization is dependent upon oil and everything from agriculture to everything we do pretty much. So it'll be a world without airplanes and a world without, without a lot of the luxuries that everybody's taken for granted.
Well, maybe that is a good thing. I mean, let's see what comes with that world. Maybe it's not such a step backward, but a really giant step forward when we get over the whole oil dependency and the abuse of the planet to suck it out, eh?
Yeah, well, you know, we're certainly have to learn to live in harmony with the natural world. That's for sure. I mean, I like to compare what's going on here to being on a spaceship. You know, and this is what the Earth is a spaceship, and every spaceship has a life support system, and the biosphere is our life support system. It provides the oxygen, the food we eat, on and on. And on this spaceship, there are two types of species. There's passengers and there's crew. And humans happen to be passengers. We're just having a good time. And we're taking the crew for granted. We're killing them off. And it's the crew that runs everything. You know, the insects, the fish, the worms. You know, 2 years ago, I think the Fox Network got really upset with me because I wrote an essay where I said that worms were more important than people. And, of course, they were outraged and said, how could you possibly say something so horrible as to say worms are more important than people? And my answer to that is I said it because it's true. Worms are more important than people because worms can live on the earth without people, but people cannot live without worms. We need them. They don't need us. We need fish. They don't need us. We need bacteria and insects. They don't need us. These are the crew that run this ship. And without them, we're in serious trouble. We, you know, Albert Einstein once said, remove the honeybee, I'll give civilization 4 years, and then it'll collapse. And we're intimately connected to these species, yet we take them for granted, and we just wipe them out without any reservation.
Yeah, well, definitely the question of the human race being the most intelligent species on the planet is, by and large, the biggest thing to ponder that we can come up with in this conversation. I don't think so. I, of course, think that the whales and dolphins are far more conscious than we are, and many of the animals as well. Captain, I know you're rushing. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying that, I don't think humans are the most intelligent species on the planet either, and I get criticized for that. I was debating this whaler one time, and he says, well, you know, you say whales are more intelligent than people. How can you say something so ridiculous? And I said, well, I happen to measure intelligence by the ability to live in harmony with the natural world, and by that criteria, we're not that intelligent. And he said, well, by that criteria, cockroaches are more intelligent than we are. And I said, yeah, now you're beginning to understand what I'm saying.
Touché. Do you have a message that you could leave with the people that are listening to you today before you set out to help our whales and dolphins in the Antarctic?
Well, I think the most important message is that we've got to stop eating the ocean. There's simply not enough fish in the ocean to continue to feed ever-expanding populations of humans. And 40% of all of the fish that's taken out of the ocean is fed to livestock. So sharks are now a bigger aquatic predator than, pigs are now a bigger aquatic predator than the shark. And, domestic house cats are eating more fish than all the world's seals put together. And so this is just completely and complete insanity. And if the oceans die, then we die. And I think that's the most important message you get across. We are intimately connected to the biodiversity in our oceans. And if the oceans die, then humanity dies. And so this is really a question of self-preservation.
If not self-preservation and the immense love and connection so many of us feel to the oceans and to the whales and dolphins especially, I cannot deny. I want to thank you for giving me this time. I know that it's very precious and it's truly an honor. And let me ask you this. Are you going to be in the Mediterranean when your ships are up there?
Yes, I was. I was there last year. I'll be back there this next year.
So will I have the pleasure of coming to meet you?
Oh, that's possible, certainly.
Okay, well, I will do anything I can to. We'll talk about that when we're off the air, and I will do my best to have that experience, and who knows if I can maybe have some time on ship helping out. And I want to thank you again, and after we lose the captain, I will talk to you about how we're going to rally forces to send some bucks to the Sea Shepherd. Your website is Sea Shepherd only, without the S, is that right?
No, Sea Shepherd, S-E-A, the S-H-E-P-H-E-R-D.org.
Sea Shepherd.org. Tune in. Thank you, Captain. I'm going to let you go. Although it's a torture, I'd love to keep talking to you, but I do respect that you're on your way. So thank you. Thank you from my guts for all that you do and to your teams. And just know that we're behind you and you're our hero.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Captain Paul. Ciao, ciao. Signing out for the moment. Well, that was amazing. That interview that you've just listened to was taped because of cosmic intervention, because my interviews are always live. And for some reason, we had to pre-tape it because Captain Paul was leaving like an hour after the interview. And so we taped it, and lo and behold, last weekend, squiggly wiggly woo. what was that? Boy, isn't it fun? I mean, you just never know what you're going to hear and see and do on the electronic bands. What was I saying? Yeah. All right, wait a minute. There's a little squiggly poo in the line, and I'm going to see if I can rectify that. Hold on there. Because it's hard to talk when somebody's going squiggly, squiggly, wiggly. All right, I think we've got it fixed. Anyway, the interview was taped, as I was saying, and fortunately, because last week it was supposed to go on the air, and BBS Radio had a little intervention, shall we say, and was down. Interestingly enough, all right, now, what is this little squiggly woo? All right, let me just check with my producer. I'm taping it in. Dawn, the sound. And let's see if we can get that fixed. Anyway, let's take a break. We're going to take a little radio break coming for a moment while we fix that squiggle, and I'll be back with you in 2 or 3 minutes. So please don't go away while we check the little internet gods and figure out what's causing that intervention. We'll be right back. And I'm back, and let's hope that we got that repaired. So I want to share with you some of my impressions and feelings after having talked with Captain Paul. The truth is, we seem divided in two camps. One is the extremely horrible, fearful, just unbearable pain of seeing some of the torture that's being perpetrated in our oceans. And, you know, how many times have we all seen the horror coming out of the Faroe Islands and that those terrible, terrible images that haunt me still. And then there are the, we love the dolphins and whales and we share beautiful pictures of them and we all feel really good about that. But we need to find a place where we are turning all of these emotions into absolute forward movement, positive action as a rising body of people who truly are committed to saving the whales and the dolphins and the oceans and the seals and all the other beings that are doomed for extinction. So I am calling out to you. I really think that Captain Paul Watson is our true warrior. Not to diminish in any way all of the wonderful work other organizations are doing. But this man, I mean, he is truly a hero. And to see a man like him on the air say, I won't rest as long as there's one dolphin left. This inspires me deeply with a lot of emotion. So I would like to please ask you, for the first thing, I am going to set up a link on my site, which will link to donations to Captain Paul Watson and his team. I haven't got that running yet because I'm waiting to get their permission to use their logo and whatever. And those of you who listen and who are connected with me on the myriad locations where I'm found on internet know that I'm doing my best to rally people to write to the embassies and stir up the pot, as they say. And I really do believe this makes a difference. It certainly is a thorn in the side of the Japanese government. Now, we've had letters and postings going around with all of the embassy information for Japan, and I don't have that currently in front of me, but I will get it back out. I will probably put it on my site as well. So it's just nudging, 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 nudging constantly, and inviting people that you love and that are awakening to nudge and nudge and nudge and nudge. And never stopping, never stopping, because it isn't a momentary thing. It's not a thing to be excited about this week. It is the future of all life on this planet. And as you will read in my upcoming book, Before We Leave You, the whales and the dolphins are weaving the music of this planet. They're holding the frequencies of the oceans together. And without them, wait until you see what happens to the oceans. So I know that's a little bit esoteric, but it will be explained more. You'll understand it much better when you read the book, which is joyfully coming out in April. I wish it were out now, but it will be out in April, and we'll have a lot to talk about then. when you've been able to read that information. So I am going to go out, hopefully, to the Faroe Islands. You can imagine a screaming maniac woman running down the beaches trying to rally off all the horrible testosterone maniacal guys that are about to slit the throats of the pilot whales. That's an image. Can you just picture it? But seriously, what a great idea that they're now using these devices that send out warning sounds and frequencies that the dolphins and the whales understand is a vibration or sound that they should not approach. And hopefully we will see a lessening of the hundreds and hundreds of bodies, as he described, lined up underneath the water, just fields of dead whales. I just can't stand it. And you know, folks, it's very difficult not to get demoralized and defeated, because we're all so sensitive. And if you've spent any time in the water with the whales and dolphins especially, and felt the joy and the music and the kinship and the connection, it's all the more unbearable to imagine that a 10-year-old child could cut out an embryo, cut out a baby dolphin out of the mother, laughing all the way. This is, sometimes I just feel like there is no hope for this planet. But those are only momentary emotions. By and large, overwritten, let's say, by the voice of commitment that we can make a difference, and we must. So we have to organize. Now, I'm asking you, please, this Christmas, when you're putting up your stockings and doing all your Christmas fare or whatever your holiday is, I am not connected to any particular religious holiday, won't you please send the sea shepherds some bucks? Reach into your wallet. Come on. Think of all the extraneous, frivolous spending you do, and ask yourself if you could do this for the whales and the dolphins, if you could just put an envelope in a stocking and make it a metaphorical Christmas stocking present, a little whale or a dolphin on the sock, especially to teach your children, and send off 25. Can you do 25 buckaroonies? That's barely a CD and a cappuccino. And send it to Captain Paul. I know I will be doing my best. We're all facing issues with money, and I'm of the opinion that, of course, the more you give, the more abundance comes into your life. But this is so urgent. We really, these people can't do it without us. So please, please, please reach into your hearts and do what you can to help. And speaking of that, I have a little announcement. I've been talking to a Hollywood producer for a year now, as I have intimated. And we were talking about doing a pretty big, really interesting global DVD that would be of the same title, Before We Leave You, for the whales and the dolphins. And we're just not getting anywhere. So your old friend Patricia Corey has decided to do it on my own. That is, to forget the Hollywood producers and to make the video with the help of like-minded people who want to help. And it's just amazing. I mean, the majority of the funds that will be collected from this video will go back to the whales and dolphins. So I have Eddie, who's hopefully listening in, who has committed. Thank you, Eddie. And I have Kyle, who's committed to do some amazing artwork. And I have Ryan, who's going to be doing some filming. And I, too, need some support. If anybody wants to be a co-producer of this film, let me know. because we can do something big together. We've got to do things together. We are not able to do the work we need to do on our own. It's the united front that's going to make a difference. So I want to make a video that will touch lives, from children to the most mean Darth Vader cranky people who don't give a damn about the life on this planet. Surely there's a way to touch them. And that's what the intention of the video will be, to really reach people from all walks of life and to make them understand that the whales and the dolphins are more intelligent than we are higher consciousness beings, and they need immediate wave of human consciousness to turn the tables on the way things are going. And I know we can do it, and I'm calling upon you to help. So let me hear your rally, starting with Captain Paul, so many other organizations as well. I personally am devoted to the Sea Shepherds because I just can't believe they're willing to die to save dolphins and whales. That really speaks miles about the intention of these people. Okay, so I'm asking you to call your, to keep up the campaign of writing to the embassies. They really don't like hearing from you. But if you imagine Japanese culture, it's a disgrace. It's a culture that's about honor. And the more they are dishonored by a global outcry for what's happening, the more it weighs on them. And it can only eventually take hold. And let's not all be on the case of Greenland. Let's not forget that the United States, which was supposed to be entering a phase of this presidency of ecological awakening and whatever, voted against the whales and dolphins. How shameful that the whales and the dolphins were abandoned by the Obama administration. Shame, shame, shame. And then, of course, there's Greenland. They've already killed 8 humpback whales this summer. And it's supposed to be because, let's see, what was the excuse? Their Inuit tribes need to kill whales to continue their pursuit of happiness. And instead, it's ending up in fancy restaurants and hamburger joints and stuff like that. And that's been documented by Hardy Jones of BlueVoice.org, who went over there personally to see what was going down. And I want you to know that I was in the Azores Islands this summer with the whales and dolphins, and I shudder to think that those very whales and that I was spending time without the ocean may very well have been the whales that were killed by the harpoons of these bastards. Sorry. I get a little bit rowdy when I think of some ignorant, cowardice human being who would throw a harpoon into an innocent, unsuspecting, playful humpback whale. They come up to you. They want to know you. They want to feel human emotion. And what they get is a harpoon in their guts. And if we don't do something about that, then we're just as bad. We're just as bad as throwing that harpoon. I feel very strongly about this. And I'm imploring you. Step up your game. Talk to everyone you know. Send petitions as to every embassy that's involved. Starting with the bastards in Denmark. The bastards in the Faroe Islands. The Japanese bastards and the bastards in Greenland. And if that's too many bastards in one sentence from a person who's supposed to be spiritual, I truly ask your forgiveness. But there is no other way to describe, in my humble opinion, someone who would harpoon or slice the throat of a living whale, loving the feel of the blood pouring out and the suffering of a living whale for a exercise in testosterone. It is time, people, It is time to rally like we have never done before. You'll be getting a lot of information from me. A lot of people have asked me, what do we do? Get busy. Send some money to Sea Shepherds. They're focused. Go to their site, seashepherd.org. See all the things they're doing. And know that without support, they can't operate. So a few less cappuccinos and a couple of donations to the Sea Shepherds would be a wonderful way to kick off the new year of consciousness. And trust me, I will be on this case more than ever before. It's the first time in a long time that I'm not channeling or writing a book. And this is going to be a year that I'm dedicating to the whales and the dolphin beings like I've never done. So sorry for the emotion. Sorry for the bastards. It's just the way I feel, and I honor that feeling. And I want you to be enraged as well. It is the rage that we transmute into positive commitment that gets us out of our complacency and on with the work at hand as the conscious beings on this planet who have the power to affect change. Never believe you're powerless. Never believe you're powerless in the hands of these others. Okay? That is my message. Thank you for listening. I can't tell you the honor it was to get an interview with Captain Paul Watson. I feel like I've had another moment with one of my heroes. One of them was Michio Kaku. Another one's Captain Paul Watson. And I'm thinking about who will be next. In the meantime, it's a big day. I have the double header. I'm going to take a few minutes to gather myself together because I've gotten a little bit emotional here. And we'll put on just a quick break, some music. And when I come back, I'm going to have a whole new emphasis. And that is the great Dr. Carmen Bolter, who I've only recently come across, which is shocking considering our mutual passion for Egypt. So she'll be with me in the next hour. I hope you'll stay with me. And I look forward to bringing you the wisdom of this wonderful explorer, adventurer, true doctor of archaeology. The woman knows what she's talking about. And we'll be talking about some very exciting aspects about Egypt. So thank you. Please don't forget seashepherds.org. You've also got bluevoice.org. The embassies need your letter of contestation. And send love, above all, love to the whales and the dolphins because they feel it. All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. This is Patricia Corey.